Have you ever had that feeling, you know, that kind of quiet hum in the background, even when everything seems, well, pretty much okay on the surface? Like, the career's going well, maybe you've got good relationships, you feel secure financially, but there's still that little sense of, I don't know, something missing.
Oh, absolutely. Like a piece isn't quite fitting into the puzzle.
Exactly. It feels like such a common human thing, doesn't it? This deep sort of search for something more. And today, we're doing a deep dive into a question that's, well, it's ancient, really, but feels fresh every time you look at it, like turning a diamond, you know? You see new things. The question is, who do you say that I am? And how our answer to that can really deepen over time.
Right. And specifically for this deep dive, we're zeroing in on this idea of Jesus as satisfaction. It really speaks directly to those deep longings we all have, those kind of hidden aches for fulfillment and how they might find their answer in him. We'll be digging into John chapter 6, which honestly has some incredible insights on this.
Yeah, it really does. It reminds me, I heard this anecdote recently. It kind of stopped me in my tracks. It was about this guy, a self-made multimillionaire. You know, had absolutely everything you could want, outwardly speaking. Big house, fancy car, retirement, totally sorted.
The whole
The
package.
whole package. And yet, he calls into a financial advice show. And he's not asking about stocks or bonds.
Okay. What then?
He wanted to know about generous giving. It just struck me, you know, all that stuff, all that wealth clearly wasn't hitting the mark for him. Something important was missing.
That is such a powerful illustration. It's like a modern version of what Augustine talked about, what, centuries ago?
Yeah.
He had this concept, this phrase about a God-shaped hole in the heart of every human being.
Right, I've heard that.
And, you know, we instinctively try to fill that void, don't we? With all sorts of created things, money, status, achievements, relationships, even just constant distraction. But Augustine's point, and what your millionaire friend was maybe discovering, is that it doesn't work. The pieces don't fit because the whole is specifically shaped, you could say, for the creator.
So that ancient idea, how do you see that playing out today? Because it feels like we have more stuff, more access to things than ever before, but maybe not more satisfaction.
That's the paradox, isn't it? You look around and you see what some people are calling a pandemic of things like depression, anxiety, addiction. And it's often hitting people who seem to have it all, the quote unquote well-to-do. It really shows that those external markers, the things we achieve or accumulate, they often just skim the surface. They don't touch that fundamental inner void and that hole, that longing. It's not just for the rich and famous. It's in everyone. It's part of being human.
Okay, so let's connect this to the Bible story you mentioned, John chapter 6. How does that scene unfold?
Right. So, to set the stage a bit, just before this, Jesus had sent his disciples out in pairs. He'd given them authority, you know, to heal people and to preach. They come back and they're just wiped, tired, hungry, and things were so hectic. The text literally says they did not even have time to eat.
Wow, that busy.
So Jesus, seeing this, says, basically, let's get away. He leads them off to what's called a desolate place, somewhere quiet, presumably, for them to rest and recharge.
But they don't stay alone for long, do they?
Not at all. A huge crowd follows them. And John tells us why they followed. It says, because they saw the signs he was performing the healings.
Ah, the signs. That seems important. You sometimes hear this distinction between fans and followers. Is that kind of what's happening here? People drawn by the spectacle?
I think that's a really insightful way to put it. The signs, the miracles, they definitely grab attention. They draw a crowd. People are amazed by the performance, if you will. But being a fan who shows up for the show is different from being a follower who wants a real connection, a relationship. The key, and maybe the challenge for the crowd then and for us now, is connecting the sign to the deeper spiritual truth it's pointing towards, and ultimately to the person doing the signs, Jesus himself. You can be impressed by the power, but still miss the point entirely.
So the signs attract, but they're meant to lead somewhere deeper.
Exactly. And there's another layer here, the timing. John notes that the Passover feast was at hand.
Okay, the big Jewish festival.
The biggest, commemorating their liberation from Egypt, the whole story with Moses and manna. So people are already thinking about festivals, about feasting, about God providing. Lots of people were traveling. The area was bustling.
That Jesus takes them away from the town to a desolate place.
Yes. That's the irony, isn't it? Everyone's geared up for the traditional feast, the usual ways of finding provision and celebration in the town. And Jesus deliberately leads them out, away from all that, to this empty, desolate spot. It's like he's challenging this very common idea we have that satisfaction comes from the world's supply closet. You know, getting the right job, the respect, the money, having all the information, the best gadgets.
It makes me think of that John D. Rockefeller line. Someone asked him, how much money is enough?
And he said,
just a little bit more. It nails it, doesn't it? That worldly kind of fullness, even a huge feast like, say, Thanksgiving. It's great, but it's temporary. You get hungry again.
Precisely. So Jesus brings them to this desolate place, this place of apparent lack, to show them where true, lasting satisfaction actually comes from, what they really need.
Okay, so picture it. Jesus, desolate place, thousands of people milling around, hungry. What's his first move? He turns to Philip, one of his disciples, and asks, where are we to buy bread so that these people may eat? Which is a kind of practical question, but John adds this little note.
Yeah, he says Jesus asked this to test Philip, because Jesus already knew what he was going to do.
Right. It definitely feels like a setup for a big lesson.
It absolutely is. And Philip's reaction, it immediately gives us our first big takeaway about Jesus' satisfaction, which is this. Our ultimate fulfillment is not purchased, but provided. Philip does the math in his head, right? He says something like, 200 denarii worth of bread wouldn't be enough for everyone to get even a little bite.
And 200 denarii? That was a lot back then.
A huge amount, like 8 months' wages for an average worker. Philip's thinking completely in terms of human capacity, money, logistics, and he instantly sees it's impossible. We can't buy our way out of this need. And that's the point. Our deepest satisfaction, that fulfillment of the God-shaped whole, it's not something we can earn or achieve or buy. It's a gift. It's provided by grace. And often, it's in those desolate places in our own lives, right? When our own resources feel completely inadequate, that's when we really learn this. We're forced to look beyond ourselves.
That makes sense. When we can't rely on our usual ways of coping or providing for ourselves.
Exactly. So maybe a question for you listening is, what are the things you tend to lean on? The things you kind of try to buy satisfaction with, whether it's with actual money or your time or your effort.
Yeah.
You could maybe ask yourself, where does most of my money go? How do I spend the bulk of my free time? And then maybe just honestly consider, have those things maybe subtly started to replace Jesus as the real source I look to for deep satisfaction?
That's a challenging thought.
Mm.
So Philip basically says it's impossible financially. Then Andrew pipes up, doesn't he? Simon Peter's brother.
Right, Andrew. He finds something. He says, there's a boy here. He has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish.
Which sounds a bit more hopeful.
For a second, but then Andrew immediately adds, but what are they for so many? You can almost hear the shrug in his voice, like it's pointless, really.
Yeah, 5 loaves and 2 fish for thousands of people is nothing.
And this brings us right to the second core truth here. Jesus is always enough. Despite the disciples' doubt, despite the ridiculously small amount of food, Jesus is completely calm, confident.
Yeah.
He just says, have the people sit down.
Just like that.
Just like that. And they do. John mentions there were about 5,000 men plus women and children, so massive crowd. They all sit down on the grass. Then Jesus takes those 5 loaves, he gives thanks to God, and he starts distributing the food. And the fish, too. And the text emphasizes he gave them as much as they wanted.
As much as they wanted. Not just a little bite.
No, that's the key. The miracle isn't just about multiplication. It's about the abundance, the fullness of the provision. Everyone ate until they were fully satisfied. Nobody went away hungry. Nobody was left thinking, I wish I'd had a bit more. They were completely filled. And this is like a little snapshot, a foretaste of what heaven will be like. In Christ, right now, we have access to all we truly need spiritually. But in heaven, all our deepest longings for love, for purpose, for joy, for connection, they will be absolutely, completely filled in Him. That's why heaven won't be boring. How could it be? It's the place of ultimate satisfaction, unending joy, because every single ache and longing we've ever felt will finally be met fully.
That's a powerful image. Okay, so everyone's eaten. They're totally satisfied. What happens next? Is the story just staying there?
No, there's one more really important detail. Jesus tells his disciples, gather up the leftover fragments so that nothing may be lost.
Ah, the leftovers. Why is that significant? Seems like just being tidy, maybe?
Well, it's partly about stewardship, not wasting God's provision, for sure. But it also points to our third core truth. Jesus provides us with what we need to bring it to others. So they go around and collect the leftovers from just those 5 barley loaves, and they fill 12 baskets.
12 baskets, one for each disciple.
Exactly. It's symbolic. The abundance isn't just for our own consumption.
Wow.
When we truly experience God's grace, when we're filled and satisfied by Jesus, that experience doesn't just stop with us. It overflows. He gives us more than enough so that we have something to carry, something to share with the people around us. The feast isn't meant to be eaten alone.
We're satisfied and then equipped to invite others.
Precisely. So the application for us, for you listening, becomes, okay, who am I going to invite to this feast? Who needs to know about this satisfaction that Jesus offers? And that doesn't have to be, you know, standing on a street corner shouting. It could be about having more intentional conversations with your coworkers about what really matters in life. Maybe it's finding a bit more boldness to share your hope with your neighbors, or maybe it's getting serious about a plan for discipling your own kids at home, helping them understand this feast too.
So the personal experience of satisfaction fuels the desire and the ability to share it.
Yes. You're filled up, and then you're sent out with baskets full of grace to offer.
Now, going back to the crowd for a moment, after they saw this incredible sign, this miraculous feeding, how did they react? What did they make of it?
Their reaction was immediate and specific. John says they declared, "This is indeed the prophet who is to come into the world."
The prophet, not just a prophet, but the prophet.
Exactly. That specific title connects directly back to the Old Testament, particularly to Deuteronomy chapter 18. Moses had promised the people of Israel that God would raise up another prophet like him from among them.
Ah, so they saw Jesus as the fulfillment of that promise, like a new Moses.
Precisely. And think about the parallels. Moses led God's people through a desolate wilderness.
Check. Jesus is in a desolate place.
God miraculously provided bread from heaven, the manna, for them to eat.
Check. Jesus provides bread miraculously.
The people in Exodus gathered just as much manna as they needed, and there was no waste.
Check. Jesus tells the disciples to gather the leftovers so nothing is lost. The parallels are really striking.
They are. So the crowd instantly made the connection. This man wasn't just a miracle worker. He was acting with the same kind of divine authority and provision as Moses. He had to be the long-awaited prophet.
Wow. So that explains their next move, right? They wanted to make him king immediately.
Yes. They tried to take him by force, essentially, to make him their political king, their provider king.
Yeah.
But Jesus withdraws. He slips away from them up into the mountain by himself. John implies, you know, that wasn't his mission at that time. It wasn't the kind of kingdom he came to establish. Not yet, anyway.
Right. Not the time, not the way. But the lessons from the miracle itself, they just hang there, don't they? This idea of Jesus's satisfaction.
Absolutely. Three huge takeaways. It's a satisfaction you can't buy or earn. It has to be received as a gift.
Mm-hmm.
Second, he is always enough. What he offers truly, fully satisfies our deepest needs in a way nothing else can.
Right.
And third, experiencing his fullness equips us, even compels us, to share that abundance, that grace with others. We get filled to overflow.
It really reframes everything, doesn't it?
It really does. It all comes back to that God-shaped hole. Jesus is the only one who fits. He's the one who provides that ultimate satisfaction we're all searching for, whether we realize it or not. And it's all by grace, received through faith, trusting that he is enough, and finding really ultimate joy in that reality.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, here's something to really chew on, maybe carry with you this week. If it's true, if all of your deepest longings for meaning, for security, for love, for hope are truly and fully satisfied in Jesus, what kind of freedom does that actually give you? How does that change the way you approach everything else you pursue in your life, your work, your relationships, your goals, your worries? What difference does it make to know you're already full? Something to think about.